I'd like to call this meeting of the Capital Investment Committee to order for March 14th. And we don't quite have a quorum yet, but we will begin. On our agenda today, we have the report from the Department of Natural Resources and then a presentation on the Cedar River Watershed District. As part of that. So let us begin, please. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourselves and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, for the record, I'm Tom Landwehr. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, and with me is Kent Lacosmo, who handles many of our bonding issues as well as some other major things we've got going on. We're delighted to be here with you today. We've got a presentation on PowerPoints that we will run through fairly quickly here. Before we get started, what I'd like to cover today is just a little bit of an introduction to some of the what constitutes DNR capital assets, a little bit about some of our priorities, and this year it's all about taking care of what we've got, and then get in some detail on the 2018 capital requests, and for that I'll hand it over to Kent, who will go into better detail on some of those requests. So just a reminder about what DNR capital assets are. They are a very broad range of assets. There's special statutory language that identifies natural resources assets, and they include things like buildings, obviously, visitor centers, cabins, fish hatcheries, offices, storage and sanitation buildings, and so on. But it also includes bridges, trails, water control structures, campgrounds, public water accesses, water treatment plants. Every one of our parks is essentially a small city and has its own water treatment plant. And so we have a different approach to capital asset management than perhaps those agencies that administer primarily buildings. There we go. So really our priorities this year are taking care of what we have and ensuring that what we've got available for the public in particular, but for everybody that uses the facilities, employees, other agencies, companies, really have a safe and productive place to visit and work. Of course, we manage a significant chunk of the buildings that are owned by the state of Minnesota. The state owns something in the order of 5,400 buildings, and DNR manages 2,700 of those. So we have a significant chunk of those. Half of those, roughly, are state park buildings.
Commissioner, last I heard it was the state owns 6,200 buildings.
Mr. Chairman, your number would be more accurate than mine, and that's the number that I heard from administration, but it could be they're finding new buildings out there they weren't aware of. We have a very good count of ours, Mr. Chairman. So
how many is DNR own?
2,700. And that includes everything from woodsheds to, you know, camper cabins to major regional DNR facilities to the Itasca Douglas Lodge and so on.
I was going to ask that question, so I'm glad you answered, but I'm going with the 6,200 and the other.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll look more closely into that, make sure I'm using the right number. A big part of our responsibility as well is because these are public facilities, and including things like forest roads and bridges, that we are ensuring public safety when we are administering these facilities.
And Commissioner, I don't mean to keep interrupting as you're going on, but might as well.
Yeah, please do.
local road and bridge money, we have a local road and bridge fund. Do you access any from that, or do you have another fund for local roads and bridges?
Mr. Chairman, Kent Lacosmo, Director of Capital Investment for DNR. Out of the county state aid dollars, there's a certain amount. It's about $4 million a year. It's called the State Park Road Account. It's in 162-something in that section of law. That's available for projects that provide connections to natural resources assets. So it's to upgrade, say, a county road that's providing access to the park or the public access that gets a significant amount of wear because of that recreational facility. So there's those dollars that come from through DOT. DOT manages those dollars. Otherwise, the dollars for roads and bridges are for the DNR-owned roads and bridges.
Okay.
That are contained within our asset preservation request.
Okay. Thank you. Now you can continue, and I'm going to try to keep quiet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And please do anybody at any time for questions. Did you mention the Park Road account? A little different process there. Mr. Chairman, members, so as you know, we've got a very large footprint in Minnesota. We're located in all 87 counties. We manage over 5.6 million acres of land and, again, 2,700 buildings. 225 of those are work locations, so it's an area forestry office, an area hydro. It's a state park office. And so our 2,700 staff, 600 are located here in the cities. The remainder of them are located out in greater Minnesota in many of these facilities. We have a built asset base that is all of those things that I mentioned, roads, bridges, buildings, of about $3 billion. Historically, we have not done a very good job, frankly, of requesting money to maintain those buildings and those assets, and so many of them are in pretty rough shape, and we'll get into that in a little bit when we talk about our facility condition index. So, Mr. Chairman, members, this is a little bit about the four priorities. The first of four priorities we've got in our bonding request this year is with respect to asset preservation and replacement. This really is taking care of what we've got. So those buildings and those assets we've got, making sure that we take care of those and making sure that they're useful and safe. It will include ensuring that buildings meet code compliance. It will ensure that we are repairing infrastructure when we've got, as you'll see some pictures in the presentation, some bridges that have footings that are getting rough. We've got some trails that have some real needs for upgrade. It includes building and energy efficiency elements. We try to reduce the amount of energy for our buildings, and keeping them efficient is a good use of state dollars, and including renovation of other existing improvements. So forest roads, as I mentioned, trails, the Sakata Trail is one of our poster children down in the Faribault area where there's serious need for upgrading, that the trail is in such bad shape in some places that people actually would rather bike on the highway. So we're looking at taking care of what we currently own. That request in our total capital asset package is about $130 million. And you can see how that's broken out. About $60 million of that would be for buildings. $30 million is for wastewater systems. For example, Itasca State Park has got a sewage lagoon that's in serious need of repair, and that in itself is a $3 million project. So a number of dollars just going into taking care of what we've already got. Mr. Chairman, members, we only recently completed a comprehensive analysis of our capital assets and the needs for reinvestment in those capital assets. One of the things I noticed when I started in 2011 is that we had a bunch of buildings and facilities, but we did not have a good inventory of the needs for those buildings. And so Kent and his shop undertook a comprehensive facility condition assessment. We did the buildings in conjunction with the other agencies. We did some of our other assets as well. Determined when we went through that facility condition assessment that we had a number of buildings in very, very poor condition and some that were in excellent condition and a bunch in the middle. We determined that in 2015, when this first report came out, that we had a deferred backlog of about $330 million. That's $330 million just to take care of the things we had to bring them up to average condition. We've since refined that that assessment. We now have a facility backlog of $360 million. $370 million, Mr. Chair, because we are not putting into maintenance those that we need. I should mention, Mr. Chair, members, we have historically never received more than $17 million in a bonding bill to do this facility condition work. We estimate that if we were to try to get rid of that backlog over 10 years, we would need $130 million a year just to get rid of that $330 million, $370 million backlog, as well as deal with the annual change in maintenance needs that we have.
So how much a year would you need?
$130 million per year, Mr. Chair. Again, that will get rid of that $370 million backlog. At the same time, we're taking care of the new needs that come up each year. And, Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned, members, $17 million is the high water mark that we've received, and I think that was in 2012.
2011.
Historically, $5 to $10 million has been the number that we've gotten for asset preservation. So with a $3 billion asset, obviously that we have not been reinvesting into those assets as we need to. And so that is our priority today. That I know that the governor's priority is work on asset preservation, and we hope you'll see the wisdom of that. Mr. Chair, I see a question.
Representative Hansen, to this point.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee and commissioner, you know, we created, after the success of HEPR, and everybody here knows HEPR, and I think it actually has some general knowledge in the among the populace, but we created NAPR, which was supposed to be the natural resources equivalent. And that, I don't know if it was the acronym that was the bad thing, but we have not, we actually have a method of, in law, to do this, these things, but it's never really been used. It doesn't show up on a byline. It's been in law for maybe 10 years, 8 years?
Since 2009.
2009, so we're going on 9 years, and the idea was that we wouldn't get into competition over which roof or which fish house to do, but we would just treat it like HEPR. And it really hasn't been realized. I think it's still a good idea. I think that the DNR hoped, and we hoped that that would actually help on getting these asset preservation components, but in a strange way, it is not. It's actually resulted in less.
So we have not been putting any money into NAPR?
Yeah, I would have them answer that.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, you know, it may not have been specifically identified in the appropriation language. We did get in 2011, it was a special session, so it shows up as 2012. That was the $17 million the commissioner mentioned. Then we had $10 million in 2014 and $15 million last year for natural resources asset preservation.
So we are putting some money into that.
Mr. Chairman, yes.
But you would like to have $130 million in there.
Mr. Chairman, members, I need to correct myself because I didn't realize it when we updated. And I want to reference this document you all have. This is our 10-year plan. This goes into the facility condition assessment as well as a delineation of the different types of assets and what the need is for each of those assets. Because we still, between 2015 and 2018, we still have not been investing what we need to. The new total, and that's actually on the slide in front of you, is $140 million just to, over 10 years, get rid of that backlog and then just deal with the annual maintenance needs. But, Mr. Chairman, members, I would really encourage you to take a look at this. It really goes into great detail. You can see some of the examples. There's some pictures in here of some of the facility components that we're talking about, as well as a description of what those assets are and what the need is for each of those particular assets.
Thank you. So just to clarify again, the $140 million, would the correct place for that be in this NAPR account?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, that would be the natural asset resource preservation, natural resources asset preservation. And, Mr. Chair, I should mention as well, this is just one component of our overall capital request, which is a total of $170 million, but $130 million of that request is for natural resource asset preservation.
So we just upped that to 140?
Correct. The annual need, Mr. Chair, members, is 140. The governor's request before you is $130 million.
Glad to learn more about the needs of NAPR. To me, that was one of my seventh grade students when I was teaching.
And Mr. Chair, members, at this point, I would turn it over to Mr. Lacus to go a little bit into the detail.
I think what we'll do, I'm getting questions here, and I know that I've been kind of violating my own rule. But let's wait till Mr. Lacismo is on, then we'll continue with the list of questioners. Proceed, please.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the commissioner said, all of the agencies have gone through the facility condition assessment process, and you heard about that when the Department of Administration was in front of you. So all the agencies use the same process. You look at a building, and you look at all of the components of that building, the roof, the walls, the windows, the foundation, electrical, and it gets a rating. So we have over 29,000 building components within all of these buildings. So all of those are rated, and then you come up with numbers of buildings. You get an overall rating for the building. So out of our request for $130 million, $60 million of that would go towards buildings. And there's essentially $25 million for poor and unacceptable building components. This is the roofs. This is the utilities. You know, the walls, the foundations of buildings. And if you look at this, the overall ratings then are for unacceptable buildings. We have 192 that are in unacceptable or crisis condition, and 520 buildings in poor conditions. Some of these, the committee on your tours, you did stop at Zimmerman. And that building is one of the ones that is a report to work site, has people in it. It is an unacceptable building according to the facility condition assessment classification. And that's one of the buildings we would address with new dollars. About a third of our buildings are over 50 years old, and they've had a lack of maintenance, and that obviously is showing. We also, within this request, would address poor building components at things like the Lanesboro Hatchery, Gooseberry Falls, Nicollet Court. The committee was also up at Lake Itasca. The building to the, when you're standing in the parking lot, the building to the left of the Douglas Lodge, if you recall, is the Nicollet Court, which has, there's a picture in here later, I believe, of the Nicollet Court. But that building has been vacant for a number of years. It needs a new roof. It needs significant rehabilitation. This next slide here shows the areas, the buildings that have the poor and unacceptable building components. So we have, if you just look at the building component sheet from the ARCABUS, which is the Department of Administration's program, we have $4.1 million worth of unacceptable building components and about $30.6 million worth of poor building components. So as you look at these dots on this map, and the boundaries are the Senate districts, the dots may represent the building. There could be several unacceptable or poor building components at that location because they would just stack up. In the metro area, which is really hard to see on this map, but that's Afton and Fort Snelling, for example, would have buildings that have unacceptable or poor components. Going on with our entire request for natural resources asset preservation, there's another $70 million for other issues. That would include the water and wastewater systems, which the commissioner mentioned, the Itasca system, which I'd be pleased if we could get it done for $3 million. I think it's probably going to cost closer to $5 million, but we're doing the design now, so we'll see what that comes back at. We've also have an issue at Myrie Big Island Park where they've got a system that has had some problems there. The solution there is to connect to the city sewer system. We've got other individual systems around at various parks that need to be addressed. Water supply, you've all heard about the Blue Mounds water supply where they've been without potable water at that park for 3 years. With last year's money, we are doing the connection to rural water, so they'll at least get drinkable water to the park. And then we need to look at redoing the plumbing within the park, so that would be an additional cost. Jay Cook State Park, this fall, the water line that serves that park broke. This is a water line that's laying on the bottom of the effluent channel or the channel from the Minnesota Power's hydropower. So that's where the water line lies, but it has breaks in it, and we'll need to have that repaired to get water to the park. And we're right now determining the cost of that, but that's, you know, these are all buried systems that you don't see and you don't think about until they don't work. And, you know, they've been getting by with without running water at the park office for the last several months. Renewable energy systems, we do provide and look at solar and look at other options for providing energy to our buildings. Roads and bridges, we combined this, you know, like three sessions ago. Instead of having requests come in for forest roads and bridges and park roads and bridges and wildlife roads and bridges, it was combined into just a roads and bridge request within asset preservation. And, you know, and those are spread throughout the state. Our request would include about $14 million for roads and bridges. And on our bridges, we do the same review on bridges that DOT does. So they're rated the same way, and we obviously would do the critical ones first or the poor bridges and do those that where we had to limit traffic or close weight restrict bridges. So if they're, you know, certainly if they're unsafe, we close them, and we do work with the worst bridges first. Next on that list is the trail bridges. And there, as the commissioner said, the Cicada Trail is one of the worst in the system. And I know Representative Considine and I have talked about that. We're doing the first phase of that from, from Madison Lake to
Elysian.
To Elysian is the first section, and that'll be, it's out for bid right now. We'll get that back shortly and then know the schedule of that. It's likely to cost about $1.4 million. Because it's essentially a complete reconstruction of that. It's not just repaving. When they built that, it was one of the first trails. When they built that initially, they just took out the railroad ties and they didn't regrade the entire foundation. So that's causing problems. And then there's another section that goes from Elysian to Waterville that'll be a little bit cheaper than the $1.4 million we're spending now, but it's going to be in that ballpark. There's fewer culverts and crossings in that line. And that's just one of the, or 14 miles of the 675 miles of paved trails that we have. Water access sites, there's pictures in here that show, you know, they get damaged over time and just wear out. And then also water control structures, we have $3 million in this request for water control structures. These are not dams that are covered under the dam safety program. That's a separate program. These are the small water control structures that don't qualify as a dam under the dam safety program. Moving forward, this is it's kind of hard to see on this slide, I guess, but you also have a handout that shows this. This shows what our initial request was for the other requests and what the governor's recommendation was. For the natural resources betterment of buildings, our request was for $20 million, and the governor has forwarded $10 million. This is for dealing with buildings at you can't do everything out of asset preservation. There's constraints on some of the things that you can do. So this would be dealing with pre-design for buildings, potentially at Spicer or Bemidji, looking at a new office or some changes that need to be made at International Falls and at
it's escaping me.
Cloquet, there's the option to buy and sell and do an exchange with another party. And if we're doing that, we would avoid $330,000 of deferred maintenance on our Cloquet building and be able to move into a better site. The other thing there is the, and not sure when this committee was at, but this year they did stop at the Drill Corps Library in Hibbing, and there's a need for an expansion of that because they're nearing capacity. They currently store about 3 million lineal feet of core, which if you were on that tour, you know that's that goes from here to Chicago. And they have the potential to get a bunch more core as more exploration occurs, and they will need a place for that to be stored. We have an obligation to store that. Going forward, the Natural Resources Acquisition and Betterment of Lands, we had a large request there for three things: acquisition, $30 million, betterment of public lands, $35 million, and the school trust land acquisition was $80 million. There is not a recommendation to fund that. One of the things that's included in there was reforestation, is the things that we would see in the betterment of lands, also state trail connections, the groundwater monitoring wells, dealing with those kinds of projects, stream restoration projects, are the types of projects that would be included in the betterment of public lands. Improving accessibility to state parks and rec areas, our request was $20 million to do four or five parks. The governor requests $10 million. And that's a request to go to a park, and our top priority is William O'Brien Park, and to make all of the facilities at that park, all of the trails, all of the buildings, everything fully accessible. And we would start at William O'Brien, and then Fort Snelling would be the second priority park for that that activity. The other project we had on here was Lake Vermilion, Sudan Underground Mine State Park, and the request was for 13, and the governor has a recommended zero. The flood hazard, and part of that request did not include the Sudan elevator shaft. That work would be included in our natural resources asset preservation. And that, if you recall, after the fire in 2011, with that appropriation, then a lot of the money went to repair the bottom 300 feet. And then these dollars would go towards the that middle section or the next section. I think it's about 250 feet of elevator shaft that would be repaired. The flood hazard mitigation program, you also have looked at that. You were on your tour. We went from Moorhead north on 75, and you looked at a number of projects. And there are projects. Our request was for 20, and the governor has forwarded that full request. That includes projects in Moorhead, in Halstead, in Golden Valley, Austin, Afton. There's a number of projects around the state. We are making significant headways. The program is a study recently done by the federal government that identified the benefits to that. And if you looked at just flood hazard or flood damage, the benefit of doing flood mitigation is $7 to $1 of investment. So that is a significant investment. The other thing that you have in your that was handed out before I go on, I guess I better cover the dam safety repair reconstruction, which is a $2 million initial request, and the governor has requested $1 million. Last year in the 2017 funding, we had a little over $15 million that went to a number of projects. So this continues work, and this would go towards a bunch of a number of state-owned dams, and they're relatively small dams, so we would do about four more dams with this appropriation. This program is also a grant program that provides money to local government local government-owned dams. And then the last request was Parks and Trails local grant program. That was not recommended for funding. In the in your handout, it was also just our fact sheet that shows those items that are included in this request for the overall funding. I mean, our initial request for everything was $352 million, and we gather that by asking divisions to identify their needs, and then it goes through the process through the governor's office and MMB to come up with the governor's recommendation. The middle pages on this fact sheet handout, really address the asset preservation request and those numbers that we've already just talked about, with some more specific bullets and points to make. And the big thing, like the commissioner said, you know, this number keeps going up. The unmet need for deferred maintenance has risen about 8% a year, so we need to make an investment to be able to whittle that down. The continuing on, we do have some more pictures of various facilities around the state. I mean, this is a bridge that's failing. You can see the bottom right picture on this, how the stringers underneath are bowed. The next slide shows some of the conditions at State Park. Building on the left is Nicollet Court. The roof there is one at Jay Cook State Park at a sanitation building. And the bottom one is some failing concrete and support at Fort Ridgely Park. The next for non-building assets, here's some bridge abutments, and you can just see the condition that those are in. At work sites, we've had problems with steps and concrete spalling. The building on the right is the Wyndham office building that had water damage, and out of the money that we got in 2017, we're addressing those concerns at Wyndham. It's currently out for bid. Then the last slide here is just showing if we do collect about $4 million a year from the divisions based on the space that they own, and that goes towards maintenance and some of the smaller things that we couldn't spend bonding on, like furnaces and water heaters and smaller repairs. So we do that as the as our facility maintenance dollars. But above that, we look at asset preservation or natural resources asset preservation to provide the larger projects and the major renovations. And if we only did the monies that we collect, you can see with the green line how the overall costs just continue to rise. That, I think, is a real quick overview on our program, and we can answer any questions the committee may have.
Okay, thank you. First of all, I think we will approve the minutes of March 13th, and I will officially call the meeting to order and do that. Representative Lewick, you look Lewick? Representative Poston. I get you two mixed up all the time. Would you?
Mr. Chair, I've reviewed the minutes. They look great, and I would like to move them.
Thank you. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes have carried. And now we will proceed to questions of our testifiers. And we'll start out with Representative Poston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a finance slash accounting question. I've got a couple of them for you. Do you have a balance sheet that is specific to your agency?
Mr. Chair, members, we do not have a balance sheet. It's only, as I mentioned, it's only been in the last 5 years that we've even actually had an assessment, an inventory of the buildings.
Okay. So you don't have an accounting from the finance department, sorry, Mr. Chair. You don't have a balance sheet of income and those kind of things like a business would have in your agency?
Mr. Chairman, members, the balance sheet, of course, would relate to the assets, and we don't have a balance
sheet. The balance sheet would show that you had assets. It would show that you had cash. It would show that you had receivables, that you had payables, all those sorts of things. And you're saying you don't have that?
We do not have Mr. Chair. We do have the operating budget, so we have the sort of the income statement. We don't have the balance sheet.
My next question then, thank you, Mr. Chair, my next question then would be, do you have reserve accounts that you reserve monies into for anticipated repairs and maintenance outside of the smaller things that you do?
Mr. Chairman, we do not. We have the bonding allocation and unspent dollars, and that can be used for emergency measures, obviously, but we don't have a fund that is a reserve account.
No reserve. Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. And back to buildings briefly. I remembered it was the MMB report by Commissioner Franz that said 6,200.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, Mr. Chair, members, if I could just digress on Representative Poston's question a bit. When I started in 2011, I had had two terms with the City Council in Shoreview, and they did an annual comprehensive infrastructure replacement plan, a rolling 10-year plan. And it was an extraordinary piece of work because it identified every asset that the city owned. There was a condition assessment that was applied to that. So they were able to look 10 years out and identify, you know, large costs and things that they could anticipate so they could sort of smooth the expenses over time. When I came to the state, I was surprised that there was not something similar. And so actually getting this this 10-year plan of facility condition assessment was really a kind of a major undertaking, and we've gone through it twice now, so I'm glad to see the state is there. But it is an enormous asset base that we've got that we have never, we as a state, and I don't think it's just unique to the department, I think it's all agencies, have never really developed sort of a long-range plan for taking care of that. And I think this is really kind of a first step towards doing that, and I'm delighted that we were able to make it, but it's just ghastly what it identifies in terms of needs.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the facility condition assessment process was first done in 2015. I mean, that's when Admin started the using Archibus and doing facility conditions on all of the buildings. So that was the first attempt at gathering that data. And as the Commissioner said, we did a 10-year needs report in 2015, and then we just updated it. The report you have in front of you now is from January of 18. So it's at least for state agencies, we're now all doing it in a similar fashion, and it can be comparable across agencies. But that's the first time we've had that kind of data. Mm-hmm. And that was the facility condition assessments are about buildings. And our report, as you page through this, is for all of those assets covered by natural resources asset preservation.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I was a city mayor before coming here. And we had a balance sheet, and we showed all of our assets on the balance sheet, and that also included the asset of a lot of cash. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I guess, you know, I'm asking these questions because I'm curious as to whether there's any cash within the DNR that should be used for these projects. That's where my question comes from.
You bet. Great clarification.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. As you all know, all of the funds that we've got are appropriated to us, and so they're typically dedicated to very specific purposes. And some of those have a little broader use. So, for instance, if Game and Fish Fund, if we wanted to do a modest improvement on a wildlife management area, the Game and Fish Fund can fund something like that. But it also funds all of our operations. Most of our sort of non-bonding dollars are operations expenses, and so there isn't because the need of operations and because of statutory requirements of many of our funds, there isn't a lot of latitude to use them for other purposes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I guess from what you're saying and what I can gather, the DNR breaks even. You don't have income. Is that correct?
Mr. Members, the income, when we raise revenues, 85% of our budget comes from what we call dedicated funds. So think of a hunting license, a ski pass, whatever. Those are statutory funds. So they come in, they go into a particular fund, and it sits there until it's appropriated, on the biennial budget. And so the fund balance can go up and it can go down depending on what the receipts are and the expenses are. But most of our, and last year actually in the biennial budget, we were able to prevent many funds that were going to go into the red in the next biennium from not going in the red by raising fees and so on. But so we do have fund balances that carry over from year to year. But again, those are statutory funds and with restrictions on how we might spend them.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And if you have other questions, Representative Poston, perhaps you would like to have them come into your office and talk to you about it.
That would be great. Thank you.
Okay, I'm got you on the list. I'm hoping that we can be done not too much after 3:45 so we can get to Representative Poppy's bill as well. We do need to try to get out of here around 4 o'clock today. So with that, Representative Sock.
I'll pass this for you, Steve.
Very thoughtful of you, Representative Sock. Representative Dean. No, you hand up earlier?
No, I don't think so.
It's just my imagination. Okay. Well, then.
I was just waving high.
We should have gone right to Representative Runbeck in the first place.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think this conversation we've just had is really valuable, and thank you for Commissioner Landwehr for mentioning the the way, you know, cities, Shoreview, to be a perfect example, has looked at capital improvement and capital investment. And it seems to me that, you know, the two-year cycle we're on, you know, only leads to very short-term thinking. It would behoove our committee, I believe, to have and require some sort of 10-year and 20-year capital improvement plan from all of the agencies that we deal with. Because I don't think anybody knows, you know, what kind of big numbers are going to be required 10 years from now to keep things in proper preservation. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Any other comments or questions? Well, then, thank you very much.
Mr. Members, thank you for your time.
Thank you. I'll represent Poppy. We have the Cedar River Watershed District. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We appreciate the opportunity today to showcase the Cedar River Watershed District. I entered the legislature right after 2004 when we had one of the major floods in Austin. And Austin has been a beneficiary of state dollars for flood mitigation. So I appreciate Mr. Lacosmo and the work that is done through the DNR, because certainly we have benefited from much of the flood hazard mitigation dollars, and we hope to continue to do that. But we also have found that, you know, water doesn't just flow down into Austin. It flows from above Austin, and it flows into Austin. And so the Cedar River Watershed District is, it was created and is an opportunity for us to be able to try to remove and reduce the amount of flow that comes into the city of Austin. So with me today is Justin Hansen from the Cedar River Watershed District, and he's going to highlight and talk about what has been done and what we hope to continue to do. And you do have a handout that describes this, so I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Hansen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Representative Poppy. Mr. Chair, Justin Hansen, I'm with the Cedar River Watershed District. I'm also part of the Soil and Water Conservation District in Mara County, and I'm here today representing Vision 2020, which is a group of volunteers and that make up part of the folks that we're talking about today that have pushed this initiative forward for doing land treatment projects in the Cedar River Watershed. Representative Poppy talked a little bit about the history of flooding in Austin specifically, and one of the things that occurs to me when we've had tours there in the past, there's been discussion about what's going on upstream from here, and the city was charged to make sure that they fixed that infrastructure issue that was immediate, but there's also a land treatment issue that went right along with that, and so that's what we're here talking about today. The relatively new to many of you folks, the Watershed District has not been around for very long, so this may be the first time many of you are even seeing us. So I really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk about this a little bit today. So going back a little bit on our history, because we're new, I want to give you just a brief background on who we are and how we got here. You know, with the flooding issues that are going on in Austin, it's not just the city of Austin. There is, and I think our ag representatives would let you know that that's absolutely true, right? That we have township infrastructure that's being damaged. We have stream banks that are washing out, and we're losing fields right along with it. And so we very much take a watershed approach to our solution and problem solving. So in 2004, there was the flood of record, I guess. That was the line in the sand where the community said, okay, we've had enough with all these flooding issues. We got to do something about it. And so a watershed district was formed. So if you imagine that in today's time where, you know, the community rises up and says, tax me a little bit more because I need this issue fixed. That's what our folks did. So out of that came the district and a challenge to us to responsibly address our water resources issues locally. And so if we go through that timeline, in 2007, 2008, clean water funding came along, and we've been able to do some projects and practices on the field, working with our local landowners. And shortly thereafter, the community of Austin, working with the Hormel Foundation, the foundation was working with those volunteers and said, let's do an inventory on what things are in the community that mean the very most to us. The foundation has some money to invest into the community. What are the things that are going to improve the community? So as you can imagine, economic development comes up, schools. These are things that everybody would assume are the things that people want in a community, a destination community, an area that people want to go and live and thrive and be successful. One of the other priorities that wasn't expected for me, and I work in the water resource work field, is the Cedar River itself was a priority. The clean water, the recreation opportunities, and addressing the flood flows. And so some unique things happened on the backside of that. The foundation came to us and they said, look, this is a priority for the citizens of the community. We think that we have an opportunity to do something significant here. What can we do to move the dial? And we said, well, we have a capital improvement plan in place, and we have 25 projects identified that will do that, that will move the dial on our flood flows, and in turn make a significant difference on our water resources. One of the things you have to understand is water quality and quantity are very much intertwined in our area, and the flood flows that come off the land are pretty disruptive. So the analogy I always use is my little niece, right? She, when we go on vacation to Wisconsin Dells, her favorite activity is to wade out into the wave pool, right? And the wave pool, the whole idea is that you go out just far enough for a little girl that you get knocked back on your butt, and that's the fun of it. Well, these waves that are coming through our watershed in the Cedar are knocking us on our butt, and it's not as much fun as it is for an 8-year-old girl, right? It's a challenge for us, and we got to get on top of it. So we took that back to the foundation and said, let's do something significant. We already have stakeholders in place. We have unique relationships with our landowners. If you go to that back sheet, I just referenced that. We've got some maps and stuff for you to take a peek at. But that bottom right-hand corner is lit up with dots. And the green dots are practices that we've been able to accomplish ahead of a project like this. And the yellow dots are the capital improvement projects. We have had tremendous support from our ag partners in this. And this plan involves completely voluntary practices. Nobody's being told they must do any of it. We're asking folks, will you give us part of your land in an agreement through easement? We'll maintain it, but we need you to step up. And they've done so with little hesitation, to be honest. I know folks up here, you guys often hear that there's an environmental side and then there's an ag side, and you hear both sides of the spectrum. Back home, in reality, they're very much intertwined, right? Our ag producers are very proactive for addressing our water resources issue, and very anxious to be a part of those solutions. So that's been a success story for us, and it's something we're really proud of moving forward into the plan. Phase one. So if you stay on that back sheet, you can see where we're at. If we get down to the implementation, the legislature last year, thank you for passing the initial appropriation. There's $1.7 million towards water resource flood mitigation dollars for us last year. $500,000 is going to the city of Austin for a project that they're bidding, I believe this week, to build which is directly coordinated or connected to the projects we were talking about, the rec center, which is part of that foundation survey and understanding public good. We're building flood walls so that we can build a rec center for the kids in the community. So that project's on pace to get done this year. We have a number of projects that we've already accomplished as part of our phase one. The remaining projects will be done this year. But we have this one-to-one match with the Hormel Foundation, and they're committed for now for committed to supporting this project. But we want to make sure that we don't fall off at all on our initiative and our progress that we're making with those landowners. So for this year, we're looking at that phase two portion, which would be funding the rest of the total plan, which is $8.4 million. You'll see in the way the funding gets broke out, we've been able to leverage some of the Clean Water Legacy funding already. Cedar River Watershed has a little bit of skin in the game as well. We have $1 million that are committed, and we're looking at continuing to look search for other outside partners to expand the program more, because I don't, 8.4 is our cap plan. We believe that 8% is a huge benefit to the watershed and to the folks and the infrastructure in that area. We'd like to get to 20% long term. I think that's a viable goal to be going for. So with that, we just, I guess on a broader scheme, you know, this goes back to our, not scheme, maybe in a broader sense, this goes back to our specific district. But there's some unique things going on, innovative strategies that are being, that are happening right here with public-private partnerships. And I'd love to talk to you, we could probably go another hour, just talking about the opportunities for the public and the private to be interacting in water resources work. This is something that's coming. And so we want to be able to establish a model that we can carry forward in different parts of the state and be successful here and take that out to the other areas. With that, I'd take any questions.
Does anyone have any questions, members? Representative Frank, you just fake me out.
Fake me out, Chair.
All right. No questions? Well, thank you very much. I think you're doing some good work in the watershed, and you know, look forward to seeing what happens in the future. And I'm sure that Representative Poppe will be talking to us more about the need to fund this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I very much appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions, any other business to come before the committee? We will meet again next Tuesday at our regular time. And we have, if there are any hearing requests, to make sure that we get them in. You get them in, please. Otherwise, seeing no other business before us, well, King, this case is closed.